Sup, freaks, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. It's brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. They're here to help you secure your Bitcoin and then give you financial services on top of that. One of those services is their Bitcoin IRA, which allows you to easily transition your IRA from fiat assets into Bitcoin without taking a tax hit. So if you're sitting there watching the price of Bitcoin run and you're thinking, man, I should really get some Bitcoin. I don't have any liquid cash, or maybe my liquid cash that won't get me enough Bitcoin. I have this IRA account. I don't want to take the tax hits by liquidating that and then buying Bitcoin. This is why Unchained and their IRA product exists. The beauty of their IRA product is you get to hold your own keys too. It's a 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum where Unchained holds one key and you hold two. So you have control of the Bitcoin in your IRA, which is a beautiful thing. So go hit up their consultation team. To learn more about this, go to unchained.com/consultation. Tell them that Rabbit Hole Recap sent you. Get started today. Unchained.com/consultation. This rip was also brought to you by good friends at CoinKite. They make the best hardware in the space. I got my Block Clock Mini right behind me. I have my Tap Signer, my Sats cards in my wallet. Tap Signer is a private key in a card form factor, credit card form factor. The Sats card is something that you can load Bitcoin up and hand it as a bearer interest to somebody. It's great for gifts, birthday gifts, wedding gifts. You tap it on the back of your phone, click the link, you get an address, you send Bitcoin to that. It lives on the Sats card, put it in an envelope, hand it to somebody for their birthday or their wedding. Great wedding gift. My favorite wedding gift to give. They also had the MK4, the Mark IV, which is the best hardware device on the market. It's got 2 secure elements. It's NFC enabled, allows you to easily create private public key pairs offline, which is very important. You don't want to be creating your private keys on an internet connected device. You can also easily add entropy to your private key with dice rolls, which is important as well. They also have the Q1, which will be released soon. They're taking pre-orders for that, and that is got all the same internal guts as the Mark IV. 2 secure enclaves, NFC enabled, but it's also got a full keyboard, bigger screen, and has a QR code scanner. They make the best hardware in the space, hands down. So go to coinkite.com. Don't know if we have a promo code, try RHR, try CD, try TFTC, but just go get the hardware. Prepare. You want it before you need it. So just go get some. Enjoy this rip. Thank you.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Oh, we're live. Let's go. In our respective holiday backgrounds, we've got the in-laws bar behind me. You've got the old school bookcase.
The parental book. My parents' bookshelf.
Yeah. What a couple of days it's been. I'm tired, freaks. I'm not gonna lie. Yesterday was a marathon of a day.
Yeah, how was yesterday?
It's good. Woke up at 5 a.m. in Austin, Central Time. Loaded the kids into the car. Stretched to the airport. Hopped on the plane. The boys got an A on this plane ride, which was very good. They were very well behaved for 3.5 hours. They've been known to get D's and C's in the past, so this was a very pleasant surprise on this trip.
Do they get a reward
in Philadelphia? They get a couple pats on the head. It's like, hey boys, good job. Maybe an extra snack. Landed in Philly. Mother-in-law picked us up. 30th Street Station here in Philadelphia is between the airport and her home, so she dropped me off there. Met my brother there. Then we hopped on an Amtrak up to New York. Got in New York about 3:40. We were at Pub Key by 3:50. Smash Burger, did the spaces, and we had an incredible meetup last night at Pub Key, New York City. Shout out to everybody who made it. It was a packed house, a lot of heavy hitters in the house. Great discussion. Got a little off the rails at times. We had Arpdow join us. Drew Armstrong and Thomas obviously were there. Really good discussion. That should be live on their feed. And I think I'm going to cross-post it on TFTC next week, too. We did a year in review. A lot more on Spaces,
right?
They do a Spaces before the actual event.
So that was different.
It's like a pregame Spaces.
Got it. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I couldn't make it.
You weren't too far away. You know?
Sounds like a great time.
It was. It was a great time. Shout out to Thomas and everybody at PubKey. It's really great. Bitcoin third place, as he likes to describe it. And then, yeah, hopped on a 10 p.m. Amtrak back to Philadelphia with my brother. And got home around 12:30, and then my youngest was up at 7. So.
But did you successfully didn't wake up the family when you got home?
I did not. My mother-in-law said she heard me come in, but that was it. She didn't come out of her room.
This house is so cramped with family right now that if I came home at midnight, I would wake up the whole fucking household. I'd have no shot in hell.
No, and it's a Herculean effort for me because our guest bedroom's on the third floor, so I have to pass my oldest room, my in-laws, and then creep up and sneak past my youngest in his crib. He sleeps outside the room that we sleep in. Shout out to me. Shout out to PubKey. Great year in review. I mean, maybe we can save that for next week. Maybe next week we can do a year review of our own.
Yeah, we have.
Because that will be the last for me.
Yeah, this is not the last RHR of the year. We're crazy people here. So this is the Christmas special. And then the next one will be the year in review. So Merry Christmas, freaks. I hope a lot of you are with family. I hope you're enjoying the Christmas spirit right now.
I'm certainly feeling it. I felt it yesterday at 30th Street Station in Philadelphia. It's an incredible building. It's like one of those buildings that you just walk through and you look up. It's got probably has to have 200-foot ceilings. Incredible statues. Had a great Christmas display. People were traveling for the holidays. Everybody was in good spirits.
And where does it bring you into? Is that PATH? Or does that bring you into Grand Central?
Amtrak goes Penn Station.
Oh, right. It goes, but not the real Penn, not the main Penn Station, right? It's like two blocks away from Penn Station.
No, it's the main Penn Station. Yeah. You come right between 7th and 8th, and 31st, I think.
I'm still pissed off at them for destroying the original Penn Station, and it happened before I was born.
Yeah, like if you like, I've seen it's crazy what we've done in the fiat architecture world. The Midwest gets it, like Cincinnati and Cleveland. They used to be beautiful cities, and now they're just parking lots. It's a damn shame.
Yeah. Well, at least we still have Grand Central.
Yeah. Are you willing to talk about the quality of the airline that you took to get home?
Yeah. Have we talked about them before?
I don't think so.
JSX.com, freaks. Game changer. JSX is a small upstart airline that flies out of private terminals. They take old private planes. They throw 30 coach seats in them. Two rows of 15. So you're not sitting next to anybody. And, you know, you're window and an aisle. You're both window and aisle. And the way the whole thing is very Bitcoiner friendly because it's only possible because of an FAA loophole. So the FAA only regulates flights that are greater than 30 passengers, hence them having a cap of 30 people per plane. They started in Texas. They started in Dallas. You can see all their routes on JSX.com. They're slowly adding routes. But this was my second. They added Nashville maybe this late summer. And Nashville, they fly to New York and to Dallas. And it's such a convenient experience. There's no TSA. There's none, no bullshit. You like get there 20 minutes before and you like walk on. It's like, this is what they took from us. But also I don't know because it was, that was before my time too, but it's amazing. And all the big airlines are trying to crush them. They're trying, you know, they're doing the classic thing. They're like, it's not safe. They need to be regulated by the FAA, which would essentially put them out of business. The whole thing is just a big FAA loophole. And they fly out of private terminals. Our whole flight was just babies and dogs. It's a really funny business model because they have like, they have three demographics that you think would never match up. It's business travelers, dogs, and babies. But it's great. I
would recommend. Where do they fly to New York?
Because they fly, that's another part of the, because they were able to keep like, so for Christmas, I waited till 5 days ago and then flew into New York 3 days before Christmas. I'm flying out right after Christmas. So it was like worst case scenario in terms of booking. So it's a little bit more expensive, but usually it's only $250 each way between Nashville and New York. So it's a little bit more expensive than coach, but it's such a better experience and it's cheaper than most first class seats. But they fly into smaller, less serviced airports so that they smaller, less serviced private airports so that they get a better deal. So they fly into Westchester. That's the main trade off.
Nice.
But yeah, depending Bennett, on where you go, that's more convenient for some people.
Yeah. Bennett's mentioning JSX used to have more Austin routes. What happened? I don't know because I've flown JSX a couple of times out of Austin.
So they're very – they adapt. They're adapt. They're nimble because they don't have all this regulation bullshit and they don't have massive bureaucracies. So I think they just like dynamically constantly change routes and see what works and sees what doesn't work. They don't have to like install a terminal or anything. They just they're being very nimble with it. So originally like Austin, one of my biggest Austin jealousies was that Austin had all these JSX flights and I heard from all the Austin crew how great it was. And then they removed Austin and then added Nashville. So who knows, in 6 months they might remove Nashville and add Austin. But if you're listening to this and you're going to Nashville or you're going from Nashville, fly them so that they don't leave us because it's fucking dope.
Yeah, the only route out of Austin right now is to New Mexico. It's like, who the hell is going to New Mexico?
No, it's specifically for – like they also are nimble enough to do seasonal routes, right? So that's the Taos. So it's skiing. So they're like 4 months of the year, they have this great, I think I saw a post from Chris Calicott. He says like, it's great. You fly there for skiing, you land, they have a shuttle that takes you right up to the mountain and they just have like this really tight experience. And so they can be really nimble with that. So when you go to the map, you can see certain ones are seasonal routes and certain are full year routes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, really? I was using it to fly to Dallas. Like instead of driving 3 hours, you could pay like $120. It was like a 10 minute Uber from my house. Get show up again 10 minutes before the flight, get on 45 minute flight and you're there. Not anymore though. They took that route away. I hope that like an Austin to Nashville route would be extremely convenient for me considering I go to Nashville like six times a year now.
Yeah. Literally all I need is Nashville, Austin, Nashville, New York. They can cut out all the other routes and I'd be cool with it.
Yeah. Yeah. $350 round trip, LA to Vegas. That's not bad at all.
Very reasonable.
Yeah. This isn't an airline podcast though.
they have free Starlink internet and it doesn't have there's no sign in. There's no, you know, CAPTCHA, ask me for my email stuff. You literally just connect to the Wi-Fi. You can use a VPN. You could do whatever the hell you probably run a Bitcoin node while you're flying if you wanted to.
This is what they took from us.
Yeah.
JSX can bring it back. They are bringing
people don't realize in the 80s, all the airplanes had way better internet than they do now and they just regulated.
They completely fucked it. I'm getting Thomas Pacquia is messaging me. I think you might see that we're live. And he's saying Odell's never been to PubKey. We had to Photoshop you in last night. This is blasphemous.
It is blasphemous, and I brought great shame to my family. But also, it was important to prioritize family.
Yeah,
I'm only going to be here for 5 days.
I know what that's like. That's what feel a bit anxious right now. I've been here for 24 hours and it's been all work. So we're going to wrap this up and then I'm going to focus on family. I'm going to go see my grandmother.
It wasn't like it's not like I'm on vacation. I wasn't on vacation yet yesterday. Anyway, I had 2 board meetings yesterday. You know, so 4 hours on calls.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually got it was great that the boys got an A on the flight. We were split up, rows 15, 16, seats A and B. So I took the youngest. My wife took our oldest. And the hack, if you're a parent, you have like a kid who's between the age of newborn and like 2 years old, bring a car seat. Just pay for the seat, bring the car seat. It's worth it.
You don't take advantage of the... How do you attach the car seat to the airplane seat? With the seatbelt?
Yeah, the seatbelt through like the loops of the car seat. And you,
like, they don't have the clip things that the cars have, right?
No. We just do seatbelt through the back, make sure it's really tight, and then lock them into the car seat and have them sit there. It took like a 2-hour nap. It was great. I got a lot of work done.
So funny. Before you have kids, like, you hear a baby crying on the plane, you're like, can someone like shut up that kid? And now, like, when you hear a baby crying on the plane, you're like, oh, thank God it's not mine.
It's either that. It's a combination of that. And, like, I know what you're going through. Like, I have some empathy for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of sympathy there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. Holiday travel. Seamless trip here. We'll see how the trip back goes. And with that, we'll transition to the Bitcoin stuff. Going to Clark. Current price of Bitcoin is $43,645 cuckbucks. One cuckbuck's going to get you 2,291 sats. Sitting at a market capitalization of $854.5 billion. We're currently at block height 822,420. Nice. Which means we are exactly 17,580 blocks away from the next halving, which will cut the subsidy from 6.25 Bitcoin per block to 3.125 Bitcoin per block. Before the halving, we will have multiple difficulty adjustments, and the next one is 108 blocks away tomorrow. So it'll happen within the next 24 hours. It's looking like an upwards adjustment of 5.6%. So back on the hash rate growth here after the last difficulty adjustment, which blocks have been coming in at 9 minutes and 29 seconds on average since last adjustment. In Clark's teeny weeny mempool, there are currently 77,603 transactions. And Logan, you pull up mempool.space and I'll read it from here and I'll have it up. There are 312,987 transactions. And as a man of integrity, a man of accountability, I will call out the fact that I have been completely misreading this stat for about a year. I've idiotically been scrolling left on the blocks and just reading the amount of transactions in the last block. Logan and Matt.
No, shout out Logan. Logan actually didn't trust and verified and told Marty before we started ripping that he's been reading the wrong unconfirmed transaction number for weeks now.
Probably a year.
You have to remember that this is only relevant because the default size for a mempool, for your own personal mempool, if you just are running Bitcoin Core, is 300 megs. But as you can see from mempool.space, they're tracking 1.5 gigs of transactions. So that's why Clark's unconfirmed transaction number is kind of useless right now. The real unconfirmed transaction number, all unconfirmed transactions that are waiting to be confirmed, is what mempool is showing, mempool.space is showing, because they run an incredibly large mempool.
Yeah. Shout out the mempool. Hand up. Been reading the wrong stat for about a year now.
that'll change moving forward. We got the right stat today.
Marty, do you think Memples are going to clear in 2 days?
There's a chance, you know, there's a chance.
There's no shot. Do you want to bet?
No.
Do you want to add to the bet?
I think we are still 36 hours away from the bet coming due.
Do you think Mempools will still clear, or do you still under the belief? Because we've talked about this at length, and you said Mempools will always clear eventually. Do you still believe that?
I think so. I think we'll definitely.
When do you think they're going to clear, Bob?
Somebody was heckling me last night at PubKey saying they're never going to clear again.
When do you think they're going to clear by?
I don't know.
See, I was there in spirit. Shout out to the freak who was heckling Marty last night.
You'll have to listen to it because Arb Dowd identified himself as Matt Odell. Everybody puts him as Odell throughout the whole.
Well, that's an honor if anyone's going to impersonate me.
Yellow, thank you for the mempool TA. The technical analysis on the mempool showing a descending triangle forming through the lower lows of the fees in the 8.5 approximate time frame. So consolidation at the 80s and then a rebound to ordinal continuation.
Wait, Marty, I'm not letting you get out of this question. When do you think mempools will clear by?
I don't know. I don't know exactly when, but I imagine the event will be some sort of mass consolidation or massive shift in people using the chain efficiently, whether that's.
So you don't have a date for us?
No, I don't have a date.
So you're just not going to make any Bitcoin transactions till then, or?
No, I'm still making Bitcoin transactions. But
it's interesting psychologically, right? Because when you have like an extended period of full mempools, right, where you have an extended period of this long list of unconfirmed transactions, like people start to, you know, you start to have you start to get some anchor bias there, and it's even if mempools start dissipating, right, and less transactions come in, and maybe ordinals have, you know, less hype around ordinals, and everyone gets stuck holding their complete shitcoin token bullshit that they have on like the Ordi token and all these other, you know, BRC20 token bullshit, and they don't have any retail to dump it on anymore. Like as that congestion starts to lessen, you have to ask yourself, it's like, oh, I've been sitting here and I've been waiting to close Lightning channels, or I've been waiting to consolidate transactions and do UTXO management. Am I actually going to wait for one saprobyte, or am I going to put 2 saprobyte? And then you're like, oh, but will we actually hit 2? Should I put 3 saprobyte? And that's how a fee market develops. So like if you were sitting around and I'm not going to name names, but you were sitting around and for ideological reasons or principal reasons, you only wanted to pay 1 saprobyte. A couple months ago, a few 1 saprobytes confirmed, but all the 2 saprobyte confirmed. So like if you were going to do a consolidation, you could have paid 2 sats per byte and you would have got through. But if you paid 1 saprobyte, you probably didn't. So just an interesting psychological thing to think about.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to ride this high and continue to say that mempools will never clear again. So if you want to bet me on when you think mempools will clear, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, let me take some time to think about it and I'll get back.
Show some conviction.
I got to think about it. I'll think about it.
By the way, me and Marty's bet, I think, was twice double or nothing. So when I win, no actual money will change hands, but it's worth noting that I also made bets with Q&A and Finch. So I do have some sats coming my way.
Yeah. The would have been 400,000 sats for me, but
you were wrong.
Should have taken those 200,000 sats when they were on the table.
Well, the more expensive thing is, you know, it was never about the money. It was about sending a message.
Speaking of sending a message, to wrap up Clark's dashboard, you don't have to bring it back up, Logan, but there are 9,889
Bitcoin on spent capacity, Samurai's Whirlpool. Seems like people are trying to send a message that they appreciate privacy when transacting with Bitcoin and are pushing that unspent capacity closer to 10,000 Bitcoin, which is good to see. Big list. Speaking of ordinals, speaking of mempools, all that, it's a good transition to the first topic we have on the list, which is Ocean Pool. And the announcement they made this week is that they're going to provide three potential block templates that you can interact with. Their go-to-market template, which does not respect ordinals or op return transactions over a particular
42
threshold. They're going to open that up. You can also participate in Bitcoin Core with the Ordi respecter, spam filter, disrespecter, the Ordi disrespecter spam filter. And then the third, which is an unfiltered Bitcoin Core template, which mostly the pools use right now, that will include all those transactions.
So this is what I was alluding to last week. Had a great conversation with the guys at Ocean last week. I think this is a great middle ground. I mean, at the end of the day, one of the issues that they said they came out to solve was that mining pools shouldn't be the ones constructing blocks unilaterally. Like, there shouldn't be a single person that decides what a mining pool blocks look like. Ultimately, we would like to see that go to miners and the miners have that decision. Their plan long-term has always been Stratum V2, but that is a ways off. So this is a nice low lift way for miners in Ocean to choose their block templates. The announcement was kind of like, the wording was, you know, very politicized how they announced the three templates. The first template is Knots. It runs Luke's fork of Bitcoin Core, Bitcoin Knots. And as Marty said, it op return under 42 bytes only. Then you have Bitcoin Core. So the Knots one is going to have the least amount of fees collected in terms of transaction fees. Then Bitcoin Core with the additional spam filter will have middle level fees, basically about the same fees as Knots. But if you don't want to be using Knots, you can choose that one. And then the third one is going to have the most amount of fees collected. The template is literally created based on how, you know, which are the highest fee paid transactions, and those are the ones that are included. Miners in Ocean can choose any of the three they want to mine with. If any miner in Ocean finds a block, all miners in Ocean get paid regardless of which one they choose. Now, they're continuing their 0% fee promotion for the first two options. The third option is going to come with a 2% charge, which I think they're going to add the 2% charge across the board regardless. But even with the 2% charge, you get significantly more transaction fee revenue if you choose the third one. So I expect the third one to be the most chosen. What I was hoping they were going to do, and maybe they'll still do it, it has been discussed, is show a live view dashboard of how much hash is directed at each template. I think that would be quite interesting. And I think it would be a cool little thought experiment to see, you know, how that affects, you know, where people direct their hash, and also to watch the trends there. But that's not live yet. But last but not least, one of the really unique things Ocean has done is they show the block template live on their website before any block is mined. Usually you only can find out, you know, what template, what block was mined, what transactions were included in the block after it was mined. Usually you go to like mempool.space and use the auditor feature to see what transactions are in a block is the easiest way to do that historically. So now you can go to ocean.xyz and you can see the three different block templates before they get mined, as if they were to find a block right now. And when you click through, you can really see the differences in transaction fee revenue. It's very, at times it can be very obvious. It can be, you know, a 2 Bitcoin difference in fees.
Yeah.
And that gets even more important as we approach the halving, because like right now, the subsidy is 6.25, and that subsidy is going to halve. And all of a sudden, so we saw some blocks that had 6 Bitcoin worth of transaction fees. So that would be like 12-ish Bitcoin total in reward post halving. That would still be 9 Bitcoin if you're mining all of the highest fee paid transactions.
Yeah, I think Brains mined a block for like 13 Bitcoin in transaction fees the other week.
Yeah, crazy. My point is the discrepancy will grow post halving if transaction demand continues.
Well, that was a big point of focus during the discussion last night at PubKey. It's like, how long do you think this will persist, particularly BRC20, because I think that is the lion's share of the spend and the block space that's being taken up with this. Like, how do you, I mean, my perspective is like, it's very expensive. And if that retail demand never materializes, they'll run out of money. But then you have to think adversarially, like, is it like a state attack on the mempool, or spamming on the mempool? Is it spam? Like, I don't know.
Look, I don't think it's a state attack. I think it's degens being degens. But regardless, this is exactly why we have transaction fees. When you're using the internet, DDoSes, right, denial of service attacks, are a major issue. And the way we solve denial of service attacks on the internet is through centralized man in the middle companies like Cloudflare that are literally like man in the middle as a business. And they do all this different surveillance and they're blocking users. And it's just, it's a completely centralized process to protect those web services so that they're up and other users can use them. That's why you always end up with CAPTCHAs when you're using VPNs, all this other shit. Now, Bitcoin, we can't have, as much as Luke wishes that he was Cloudflare and can just choose which transactions get included in the Bitcoin blockchain, we can't have that because that person will get pressured. If they don't get corrupted, they will get pressured by governments and forced to do things, or they'll get corrupted and greedy and act in their own self-interest. So we can't have a centralized DDoS prevention in Bitcoin. And this is why transaction fees exist, because if you want to try and deny other people access to the Bitcoin chain and by flooding it with transactions, you are going to have to pay it constantly. The fee is going to keep going up the more transactions you flood into it, and you'll run out of money eventually. And in the meantime, all that money goes to a distributed set of miners that are mining without permission and building out global mining infrastructure. So it helps secure the network long term if you are trying to attack it. And at the same time, any user that absolutely needs to make a transaction can still make a transaction. Like, we have continued to pay our OpenSats payouts because Freedom Money has a higher need than degen speculation. So we're willing to pay a higher transaction fee than them, and our transactions confirm, right? And that's the beauty of the whole system. I will say, like, these BRC20s are particularly scammy because, I mean, I think most shitcoins don't have utility, but these really have no utility. Like, they're designed to just be like collector's items.
Well, they're not even that. Like, I think it's a massive troll. And to that point, I'm not sure if you saw this video, but Logan, I just put it in our Slack channel.
No. Don't play the video.
No, video why off. Not?
Don't give them attention. Video off.
I mean,
fuck that guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay, we'll put the link in the show if you want to go watch it, but it's essentially butthurt BSVers just spamming the
chat. The BSVers don't have much money. They're a subset.
I mean, that's the point I was making earlier, is like, how much, like, Will this fee pressure persist for an extended period of time? I'm not so sure. These people are going to run out of money at some point.
Well, I will say one more time that if I agree that, you know, they're just burning money, but I mean the bullish scenario of Bitcoin is that, you know, billions of people are using it. and freedom money, success with freedom money should have significant transaction demand regardless of degens. So that does come down to a timing thing, right? It's like when, like how quickly do they run out of money versus how quickly does transaction demand from other use cases increase? I'll tell you one thing. There's a lot of people out there right now that were wishing they opened lightning channels at lower fees and consolidated transactions at lower fees. So already this increase in fee pressure has encouraged people to be ready to make transactions that might not have been made previously if fees start to come down. But also degens will degen longer than most people expect most of the time, right? What is it like, market can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent.
So, yes.
we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. And with this in mind,
Marty, all the scammers are going to take credit for it is why I don't want to put that video up. Like whoever that person is completely irrelevant. And I had no idea who that person was beforehand. And if at this point you're still a BSV supporter after all these years, after everything that's gone down, you have no money. who are these people?
I mean, the dude was literally like in a camp in the middle of the jungle somewhere. I had something to say. What was I going to say? Escaped me. It'll come back to me. But it's frustrating. I had a good point to make.
What do you remember?
What were you saying? What were you talking about?
State attack?
No, advice. Like, so you were talking about like people waiting to open up lightning channels and consolidate UTXOs. If you've already, if you're in that situation and you're a bit frustrated, just think about how you can prepare moving forward. And so like if you're accumulating sats via mining pool or something like that, just set higher thresholds for your payouts.
Yeah, and don't like...
Same if you're everybody, exchange, don't move it off an exchange until you have it. I would say like even more than a million sats now.
Everyone is in a different situation. So it's not a one size fits all. But for most people, the play here when we have periods of significantly higher transaction demand than we've had, you know, 4 months ago or 6 months ago or 8 months ago, and it's, you know, it hasn't really been sustained in any kind of real way yet. Take a deep breath, you know, don't panic, consolidate, and try and open channels at, you know, 200 sats per byte or 150 sats per byte or whatever. And at least the way I'm handling this, and I was more prepared than most, but I still have a lot of exposure. I mean, Lightning, I love our developers. I'm not trying to shit on open source contributors, right? But there hasn't been enough focus in the Lightning, protocol space, in the Lightning app space, in terms of being robust in high fee environments, right? So I have 200 Lightning channels or whatever with high fees. Like Lightning channels are getting force closed unintentionally, and they're getting, it's like I still have a decent amount of exposure here, even though I prepared. But my point is my play, at least, is I only make Bitcoin transactions that I need to make right now. And anything that is a, you know, potential luxury transaction or consolidation transaction or Lightning node management, like I'm not opening new Lightning channels now. I'm not closing Lightning channels now. I'm just making the transactions I need to make to proceed with my life, whether that's OpenSats grants or anything else. Those are the transactions that are being made right now, as far as I'm concerned, from my point of view. And I'm taking a deep breath and I'm going to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Well, since you mentioned OpenSat grants, maybe we should talk about it. There were a lot of grants given out this week, both to Nostr developers and Bitcoin developers. Since you are on the board of OpenSats and co-founded it, I'll let you take these topics and explain the grants that you guys gave out this week.
Well, you want to read the projects that received grants?
Let me pull it up. I'm trying to keep my browser as light as possible.
You don't have to. You don't have to read them. It's fine. We're both on laptops. Okay, so, Marty's going to read.
In addition to 32 Noster grants announced in the past, we're giving out 7 more grants to the following Noster projects: Loom, Flockster, Camelus, NoStrudel, ZapThreads, NIP44 cryptography audit, and NIP90 data vending machine framework. Shout out, Zach's behind Flockster, right? Shout out to Zach. He launched that that YouTube competitor on Noster this week too. What was that? Flare?
Is it Flume?
Flume or Flare? No, I think it might be Flare.
Yeah, no, there's a lot. It's hard to keep track of. I try my best. It might be Flare.
It's that stream. That stream chat. Let us know. Flare. I was right. That looks really cool.
Yeah. So, look, we're trying to ship grants as quick as possible. We actually have more that are approved that are going to be announced shortly as well. Both on the, I believe both on the Noster and Bitcoin side, but definitely on the Bitcoin side. We also announced our third wave of Bitcoin grants. Huge shout out to Gigi, who carries the, carries the org on his back. He's our fearless leader, running the whole thing full time. And huge shout out to everyone who's donated to OpenSats. This would not be possible without you guys. Just a reminder, OpenSats is 100% pass through, and we have 9 board members that are uncompensated. If you donate to OpenSats, we do not take a cut of your donations. Now, we have a separate operations fund that pays for our operations team, which is led by Gigi. But that is only if you donate to the operations fund, right? So it's a completely distinct fund. But if you donate to the general fund or the Noster fund, there is that we take zero cut. It all goes to open source contributors. It's incredibly, I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm all caps. It's like the most bullish fucking thing ever. The way the grant approval process goes is we have a very extensive approval and review process. Contributors submit applications at opensats.org/apply. And then they go into our private Git, and then we review the application. We debate the application among our board. And then if 5 of 9 vote yes on the application, it gets approved. And what is, why do we have that process with 5 of 9 people? It's because there's always concerns of conflict of interest and corruption with these types of things. So you would need more than 4 board members to be corrupt to try and get something through, or block something, right? You need more than 4 of the 9. And we have such great board members with fantastic records in this space. So we're trying our best to do it right. But ultimately, this stuff is centralized, right? So we're trying to do our best within the confines. And why is it centralized? Because we're a 501c3, so you get a tax deduction. And this is why I wanted to really hone in on this. There's 9 days left in the year. If you have a large tax bill and you're in the United States, consider donating to OpenSats. You can get a deduction on your taxes. Don't pay Uncle Sam. Pay open source contributors instead. Consider that. Go to opensats.org. And then last but not least, I just wanted to do one shout out in our Bitcoin grants that we announced this week, which is BitBanana, which is the fork of Zap Android that we've previously critiqued the name of the project. I still think the name of the project should be changed, but that wasn't a requirement for the grant. He's doing great work. He received the grant regardless. He should still consider changing the name, though.
Yeah, I still can't get over the Trumpian line yet. We have a fantastic board, incredible board.
Well, let me shout out the board. We have Nifty, Dread, James OB, Ben, Elaine. We have Elaine, what? Rodolfo, MVK, me, and Gigi. I missed someone. God damn it. Well, that's all listed on OpenSats. But we have the best board. I said Janine. I remember all the people that were on it. I just don't know if I repeated someone. It's Ben, Nifty, James O'Byrne, me, Rodolfo, Dredd, Gigi, Janine, and Elaine. I think I listed all the people.
I think
I just counted. I counted poorly when I got to eight.
No.
Well, anyway, shout out to the board. Shout out to everyone who's helped support us. It's it was a long fucking road, man. It was such a long road.
And, shout out to us. You guys are doing incredible work. I'm very proud of the work that you guys are doing. Proud co-host here.
Yeah. Thanks, Marty.
Yeah.
Appreciate you.
I'm always say that, like, dude, we were over 200 live viewers for a bit there. Thank you guys for joining us on a Friday afternoon before Christmas. Hit that like button, subscribe, share it on Twitter. You know,
by the way, that count.
When are we going to get like over 1,000 live viewers?
Marty, that count doesn't include our Noster live stream where the rider dies is.
Yeah, and that's
the Noster live stream. No, I don't think so. Does it?
No, definitely doesn't.
I think it just includes YouTube. So, I mean, on the Noster live stream, we probably have over 2,000 people in there right now, chatting and zapping, just the best people.
Shout out and to you guys.
Can get to that by going to rhr.tv/stream.
Romus, we're getting close. We're at like 85,000 sats on the zap.stream. Thank you guys for zapping.
Appreciate you, yeah. Freaks. Merry Christmas.
Smash that like button. Get it out there. I'm trying to get the momentum going. Logan, chatting while producing. Here we are, all chatting and dapping.
Ride or die.
Logan, what do you want for Christmas this year?
He wants his two front teeth.
That actually is what I was going to say.
I think I've seen your two front teeth. You have them already. Sticking on the grant theme, the Human Rights Foundation gave out $500,000 to 18 Bitcoin projects, not $500,000 each, but across 18 Bitcoin projects. You can see the list there. I'm not going to read all of them, but we'll shout out a few. Shout out to Bitcoin Plus, shout out to Seed Signer. Shout out to Me Premier Bitcoin. Now I'm picking favorites, so I had to read all of them. Mostro, Me Premier Bitcoin, Arabic Hodl, NetBlocks, Lorbin, John Carlson, Area Bitcoin, Berta Valle, Bitshala, Hack.bs, Bitcoin Deepa, Exonumia, Lola Leets, Groundswell, Kulpreet Singh, Seed Signer again, Bitcoin Plus again, and Bitcoin Atlantis. Can't pick favorites, so I had to read them all. Shout out to the Human Rights Foundation. Shout out to everybody who received grants. Thank you for the work that you're doing. And that does not end there. We have more grants not released yet, but the Bitcoin FOSS program by Chaincode Labs is accepting applicants. Not necessarily a grant, but it's a great program to get into to learn about contributing to Bitcoin Core and other parts of the Bitcoin stack.
Well, they don't charge. So
if you have the opportunity.
Right?
No, they don't charge. Yeah. So you, yeah.
Like basically
a free class.
I would group it in the same category. It's like the grant is the education program, the training program.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be connected to some pretty smart people. While baseline level code proficiency is required, they welcome all backgrounds, technical experiences. Participants will be expected to work on C++, Golang, or Rust. Regardless of prior experience, if you don't know any of these languages but are eager to learn, you should still apply. They're going to give you the resources to level up. Chaincode Labs, been around for a while, been contributing a lot to the space. Their office is probably one of the best in New York City. You're going to be right by the Chrysler Building. It's pretty insane.
That's where they hosted us for our first self-custody workshop I ever did in person.
Yeah.
Back in like 2019.
The cold card workshop. It was a good one.
And then we have another kind of same theme there, right, on the list?
Yeah, Pleb Lab, top builder, competition for the next wave of Bitcoin innovators. Logan, since you are our Pleb Lab representative on RHR, I'll let you explain this if you want to. If not, I can take a stab at it.
I was mostly concerned with making the video. Car was even like, don't worry about what it actually is. Just make the video.
Did you worry about what it is, or can you explain what it is, or do I have to do this?
It's a contest.
It's like a virtual hackathon, right?
Yes.
An intense mixed with an
educational program.
The next wave of innovators in the Bitcoin ecosystem.
There are mentors.
So it's a competition over 2 months, and there will be 3 rounds. And Pleb Lab is positioning this as the event, which is the pinnacle of Bitcoin building contest. So it's also an 8-week educational program. It's an exciting blend of builder sessions, workshops, announcements, and speaker panels, all designed to foster learning and growth within our community.
Marty started describing it himself and then just started reading from the page. He gradually just went into the page.
Logan, is this a 5-minute video or is this one that we can play?
This is like 2 minutes.
Does it have sound?
Yes.
Because like our podcast listeners, last time we played one of your videos just had silence for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It was a good video though.
Okay. 2 minutes is short enough.
Let's play it.
And welcome back, folks, to Top Builder. We've got Johnny Laserdisc over here.
Crypto for life!
I've got Code Monster, Billy Rampage.
I'm the cream of the crop.
What do you think about Code Monster?
Code Monster?
The cream rising, right?
This is the cream, right?
What are you going to do to Johnny Laserdisc?
Johnny Laserdisc, your outdated technology. Yeah, I'm going to send you home to your waifu pillow.
This is Code Monster.
The Code Monster, he builds what he wants to build. Yeah, see, the banks and the corporations, they want to tell the Code Monster how to build. But I'm wild, yeah. I'm on a Bitcoin standard, yeah!
Let me tell Elizabeth Warren something, all right?
Regulate me harder, mommy!
It's Code Monster madness all day, yeah. Permissionless and open, yeah.
So what are you building for Top Builder?
Let me ask you something. You like pictures of monkeys?
Can't say that I do, Johnny.
Well, oh, I know what you can't say you do, Johnny.
21 million Bitcoin, yeah. And that's just the bottom line, because Satoshi Nakamoto says so.
Tabs or spaces?
Tabs and spaces, bro.
I'm a true coder, yeah. I eat Funyuns and Mountain Dew, yeah. The Code Monster was too powerful for the steak diet, yeah. He had to lower himself just to give the other ones a chance.
Dark mode or light mode?
Latina.
Code Monster, what do you think about soft forks?
Code Monster doesn't mess with soft forks, yeah. I'm all hard, yeah. Feel these 20-inch pythons, yeah. All hard, yeah.
So Mr. Laserdisc, what do you think of VHS?
Logan,
Mr. Code Monster sweater looked comfortable.
Yeah, for the freaks who didn't realize Code Monster was Logan.
No, he was the Laserdisc guy. Code Monster.
Yeah, I've mixed up the names. You crushed that, Logan. Anyway, freaks, I think people don't realize how many opportunities there are for open source Bitcoin contributors right now. It was never this way before. It's incredibly bullish fundamental.
Love to see it. We love to see it. What am I looking for? Next on the list. This is pretty big news. I don't know if I shared this. I think I said this. No, I said this last week on the last trade, but the moves that Tether's been making over the last few months are leading me to believe that, I mean, before this week, they were leading me to believe that they're sort of made some sort of handshake deal with the government behind the scenes. And then this week they came out and announced that they've onboarded the U.S. Secret Service and FBI to their platform, which is pretty shocking considering the posture. It actually should be shocking. It's probably the inevitable outcome of Bitfinex and Tether and their journey throughout this industry over the last decade. At some point, they were either going to get cruise missiled or have to bend the knee to the government. It looks like they're bending the knee.
I mean, there's a middle option, right, where they bend the knee and then get cruise missiled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been bending pretty hard lately. We've seen a lot of Tether addresses being getting frozen, much more than usual.
Yeah, hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it's up close to $1 billion now, actually.
It seems like the way the letter is written is they've given the FBI and the Secret Service a nice, convenient little portal where they can press like ban address.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. I mean, and on this note too, I highly recommend anybody listening to this, go read in Logan, try and find it as I'm describing it. But Mark Goodwin and Whitney Webb co-wrote a piece on Unlimited Hangout that dropped yesterday. And that is a really insightful piece in terms of what's going on in the stablecoin industry, and then in parallel, the CBDC build out, which is they're happening in parallel. And it seems like if you read their piece, it's becoming pretty clear that stablecoins are going to be the Trojan horse to the CBDC. A lot of in-depth investigative journalism went into this piece. I had the honor of proofreading it before they dropped it. I read it on the plane yesterday, a couple hours. I got one spelling edit in there. Felt good. R3. Remember them?
I do. Mike Hearn, rage quit, best rage quit of all time.
I thought they were gone. They're not gone. They're pretty active behind the scenes, particularly in building out infrastructure for central bank digital currencies, and they're creating what they're calling, I think, USD Plus, which is their stable coin, which is going to be...
But that was always their thing. The thing was like, we're going to be the...
I thought it was like corporate distributed ledger technology.
Yeah, that's code for CBDCs. Like, what is it? They just suit blockchains. They're like the suit blockchain consortium.
I haven't heard people talk about them in years. I was under the impression they went under, like they never caught any traction, but apparently they caught a lot of traction.
Yeah, I mean, traction is probably the wrong word, but
I mean,
they've successfully gotten some government contracts or whatever. Yeah,
they're working with the UAE, and I think a few other like Southeast Asian countries.
To the freaks that weren't here 9 years ago, Mike Hearn was a Bitcoin core dev who rage quit Bitcoin and released a blog post and a New York Times article at the same time about how Bitcoin was going to die, and he was joining R3 to build the future of blockchains, scalable blockchains for suits. And Bitcoin was about $200 or $250 at the time.
Yeah, it was Pico. I think it was January 2015, right? It was like the exact bottom of that market.
There's a lot of FUD going around right now. A lot of my normie Bitcoin friends like texted me like freaking out because, you know, some Bitcoin influencer on Twitter like freaks them out. But yeah, if you guys think there's a lot of FUD now, there was a lot more in 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bitcoin was dead.
Bitcoin was dead. Again, Logan, make sure we link to that Unlimited Hangout article in the show notes, because I do think everybody should read it. It's a bit of a long read, probably take like 20 to 30 minutes, depending on your reading pace. But I'm actually going to record with Whitney next week to go over it, because I do think it's important. Shout out to Whitney and Mark Goodwin from Bitcoin Magazine co-wrote this with her. The amount of like data and dot connecting they did in this piece is pretty impressive. Again, stable coins. It seems like that's the play of the CBDC, is get all the stable coins in line. And this conversation started because Tether is inviting the FBI and the Secret Service onto their platform. There's something I never thought I'd see yet. Like, what do you think happened? They just approached Palo behind the scenes. We're like, yo, if you don't do this, you're fucked.
I mean, this is not, to me, this is not surprising at all. This was always how it was going to play out. This is why Bitcoin exists. Because the long arm of the U.S. financial hegemony will come after you if you try and run a independent, centralized financial system. This is why all the trade-offs were made that were made for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Like I said, beware. Bending the knee doesn't necessarily protect you. I mean, I want to remind people that Tornado Cash did OFAC compliance before they got hit with the cruise missile.
Yeah. And they're still in jail waiting trial, those developers. Yep. While we're on this tip of Tether, Bitfinex, and everything R3 is working on isn't really a co-option of Bitcoin, but there has been some rumblings as it pertains to the ETF and its assumed imminent approval. It seems like a bunch of, I think BlackRock had two in-person meetings with the SEC that people were able to discover via the SEC's public announcements. And then there was a third meeting between the SEC and every company that is filed for a spot Bitcoin ETF. So it seems like there's a lot of coordination going on behind the scenes. And it seems like the big holdup is this idea of being able to take Bitcoin in kind, or whether or not these ETFs will be cash in, cash out specifically, which will really change the nature of these things. And like, if the latter becomes the standard, you can only do cash in, cash out with no potential for an in-kind redemption on the back end. I think that really just makes it easier to create paper Bitcoin in these ETFs.
I don't think so. No, it's unrelated to paper Bitcoin. I think so to be clear, with the gold ETF, right? If you're sitting on 2 tons of gold, I don't know how you're going to fucking transfer it, but if you're sitting on 2 tons of gold, you can give that 2 tons of gold to BlackRock, and BlackRock will give you the equivalent amount of shares of the gold ETF, right? And the understanding was it was going to be the same idea with Bitcoin. If you were sitting on 600,000 Bitcoin and you wanted shares of the BlackRock ETF, you could send them the 600,000 shares of the Bitcoin and receive equivalent BlackRock shares, right? And that's not a taxable event in that situation. Now, I think the SEC is pushing for cash creates for two reasons. In this situation, what the SEC has basically, it seems like they've required this behind the scenes. I don't think there's been a public announcement for it, but we've seen all the ETFs change and amend their filings to do these cash creates. What this means is if you're sitting on 100,000 Bitcoin, you have to sell the 100,000 Bitcoin, pay your capital gains, then take the dollars and send the dollars to BlackRock, and then BlackRock buys Bitcoin and stores the Bitcoin at Coinbase. So regardless, in this situation, BlackRock still by mandate is required, and of course you're trusting them, right? And ETFs are an IRU, and I don't think most people should get the ETF. Like, they should buy Bitcoin and learn how to hold it and use it and secure it themselves. That's the beauty of it. But in this situation with the cash creates, BlackRock is still mandated to hold the Bitcoin and put it in Coinbase custody and have it one-to-one. So I think the SEC is pushing for two reasons. First of all, and the reverse is true, right? If you were a large holder of the BlackRock gold ETF and you wanted to get out of your position and just take receipt of the gold, you can take receipt of your 2 tons of gold, and it's not a taxable event. Right. So I think the SEC is pushing for this for two reasons. First of all, they're greedy, and the government wants as much cap gains tax as possible. So they want to tax you on the in and the out. But I think the second reason is the SEC lost their case against GBTC. And if GBTC wants to convert into an ETF, they're sitting on 600,000 Bitcoin. And if they want to convert that Bitcoin into an ETF, they're going to have to sell it for cash first and then rebuy the Bitcoin with the cash afterwards. So I think they believe it's a way to fuck over Barry. And they believe it's a way to accumulate more in cap gains tax. And I think they believe it's a way to disincentivize, you know, large, big movements in the ETF when it first launches. But I think this backfires for them. I think it's actually better for us as Bitcoiners that would never touch the ETF to begin with. First of all, it makes the ETF way less desirable to people. And second of all, it forces anyone who wants to participate in the ETF to go buy it on the open market. So I think they think they're fucking us over with it. I think it doesn't really, I think it's like a negligible effect to non-Bitcoin ETF holders, which is the whole point, right? It doesn't matter how much Bitcoin you have. It doesn't change how much power you have over the network. So I think it's much ado about nothing. What protects us from paper Bitcoin and what protects us from paper Bitcoin suppressing the price of Bitcoin, which is really the concern people have because that's what's done with gold, is that it's incredibly easy to self-custody Bitcoin. It's not easy to self-custody gold. And Bitcoin is a global market, and it's a global free market that doesn't require permission in terms of mining. But also we have P2P markets, we have circular economies, we have cash market. Like there's markets all around the world that they can't control. But I think what protects paper Bitcoin manipulation, where there's naked shorts and there's, you know, suits trying to suppress the price of Bitcoin, is that stackers will continue to accumulate supply, pull it off the market, and will never sell it. We'll spend when necessary. And as a result, what happens is anyone who plays paper Bitcoin games and tries to suppress the price of Bitcoin will go the way of FTX, Celsius, and Barry. They will get blown up eventually. There'll be short-term price volatility. A lot of people will get wrecked as a result. But ultimately, Bitcoin will be unaffected and it will truck on.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I may have had a glass or two of whiskey too much on stage last night because we did talk about this. Now I'm remembering this is, like you said, a way to prevent Grayscale from converting to the ETF with the least amount of resistance as possible. Which is, you can tell BlackRock's probably like, hey, we can't let them win. Like they got 600,000 Bitcoin, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of fear on Twitter right now. It's kind of crazy. And I think just really unfounded.
In what way?
There are a lot of crypto influencers that are like scaring the shit out of smaller Bitcoin holders that the ETF is like Armageddon, like the exact opposite. Like there's one side that is probably too overly bullish on the ETF, on the ETFs, and there's one side that's like way overly bearish on the ETFs. And the real answer is like, it's a nice humble bullish, you know, it's like, it's going to be really impactful in terms of Bitcoin purchasing power. Like it will increase the Bitcoin price. And it really does not, it should not affect people who are you know, actually holding Bitcoin and using Bitcoin. I don't know. Have you not seen, like, maybe it's like I have high school friends and stuff. They're just sending me screenshots of like people that are scaring. The way Twitter works and it's the way it's always worked, but it's been even more amplified lately, is the extremes get the most engagement. You get the most engagement to just be really extreme, whether that's on the fear side or the excitement side. Like that's where you get the most engagement, and you just have to follow the incentives as that result. Just remember that most people that have a blue check have very little Bitcoin.
I have not seen any of this. So this is news to me right now, but wouldn't surprise me. On the fear side of things, they're going to suppress the price. Moving on. Albie Lightning accounts are going to go invite only in an attempt to encourage self custody. It's encouraging to see. You think this is regulatory move?
Yeah, look, if you're a responsible custodial wallet operator and your custodial wallet has a lot of Bitcoin in it, you should be trying to responsibly reduce the amount of Bitcoin that's in that wallet. And this is what Albie's trying to do right now. And it's not an easy situation to be in. So good luck, guys. But this is good to see.
Yeah. I mean, and on that note, too, Snacker News is making a similar move in terms of becoming OPAC compliant and blocking IP sanctioned countries. And I mean, if you read this No BS post, Keon, I think, did a very good job of articulately explaining why they're making these moves specifically. And I'll just read what it says. Operating in the U.S. requires us not to provide financial-like services in certain regions, even if those financial-like services amount to pennies of value on average, like they do on Stacker News. We are waiting on an exact list of countries from lawyers. Presumably any stackers located in the country, countries on this website could be affected. Soon, if the IP address of your browser session indicates you are located in the sanctioned region, we will prevent from transacting with our wallet. It's unlikely there are many stackers in these regions, but as we continue working on understanding the laws we are obligated to follow, we will provide you with as many services as we are legally allowed. And he expresses that they remain committed to never storing a stacker's IP address without permission. For these changes, when they go live, we simply check an IP against the database of IP ranges thought to belong to these regions, then discard the IP and the result of the query, regardless of whether the IP is one of those regions or not. Further, the IP range data set is self-hosted so that your IP can't be stored by anyone else either. All this compliance stuff is free and open source. Like everything else, you can be reasonably certain we're really doing what we say we are. So sucks to see. And but like I mentioned, I think Keon did a really good job of really laying this out and walking people through the decision tree that led to this. And again, just highlights how fucked up this is. Like the U.S. government and their sanctions are preventing individual citizens in Iran, Russia, from interacting with content and tipping.
It's not about sanctions. It's about control. It's about surveillance on every single person who uses anything and does anything on the internet, particularly when financial transactions are involved. At the end of the day, this is a trend that we've been watching for a while, that we've been talking to you freaks about for a while. If you are running a custodian, if you are running a custodial wallet, I wish we lived in a world where you could have Bitcoin custodial wallets that are competing on fees and competing on reputation and competing on uptime. And there's a free marketplace for them. And if you wanted to use a custodial wallet, like that is your option. So you're taking third party custodian risk and they can rug you at will. But US regulators time and time again have shown that if you get too large and you get too successful, you have a massive target on your back and they will go after you and they will make an example out of you. And we're seeing this across the ecosystem. Again, we've seen this happen for the last 10, 15 years over and over again. But recently there's been a wave in the Lightning custodial wallet communities, Wallet of Satoshi, Albie, Stacker News. And I will say with Keon, he's a fucking legend and he's trying to do right by his users. And that's why that announcement was as descriptive as it was. But his lawyers are probably freaking out about how descriptive that announcement was. And any lawyers that were reading that are freaking out about how descriptive that announcement was. And unfortunately, I do not believe that will be sufficient. Like we've seen time and time again that if users can get around it with a VPN, they will not, that's not enough. That's not enough for the suits in DC. The suits in DC want you to do KYC on everyone globally. Just to make sure that the people they say they don't want to use your platform don't use it.
Yeah. It's pretty disgusting. I mean, on a lighter note, these people are losing the narrative battle. I think Elizabeth Warren got ratioed like 10 times this week.
I cut off. What'd you say before that?
I think they're losing the narrative battle. The politicians are.
I think you continue to fall into Elizabeth Warren's trap, and you're doing her campaign advertising for her. I mean, she got better engagement than any senator this week, period. Out of all 100 senators.
Is all engagement good engagement? I guess that's the question.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it was pretty, though I couldn't resist the one tweet I sent, which she is saying that the crypto industry is hiring a bunch of ex-government employees and military servicemen and raising millions of dollars to push through crypto. And it's like, the bill you wrote is literally written by the largest banking lobby in the country.
This is her playbook and has been her playbook for a while. I mean, there's a reason why the majority of her bills do not get passed. She does inflammatory bills that create a lot of discussion and engagement. And give her a ton of free press. And she lives rent-free in both her supporters' minds and her opposers' minds. And everyone is falling into her pretty fucking obvious trap on that front.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck is she? She's completely irrelevant.
I want to say she's irrelevant, but... people in Massachusetts, I think that's, maybe we shouldn't lash out at her. We should lash out at the citizens of Massachusetts. How do you keep reelecting this woman? Doesn't even matter. Who knows? Shout out to the Bitcoin Bugle for highlighting this. This seems like a pretty big deal. This Comcast hack, Xfinity now, headquartered in the city I'm currently sitting in right now. Xfinity waited to patch the critical Citrix bleed 0 day. Now it's paying the price. Data for almost 36 million customers now in the hands of unknown hackers. They waited as many as 9 days to patch its network against a high severity vulnerability. A lapse that allowed hackers to make out with password data and other sensitive information belonging to 36 million Comcast customers, Xfinity customers. Going to this Ars Technica article to see all the data type that was launched. No, they just say passwords and other sensitive information. I guess you can assume if it's Xfinity, your address, name. I don't think you have to give them your social security number. Maybe your internet history, who knows, is in the hands of these hackers. Centralized third parties or security holes. Xfinity, one of the worst. If you live in Philadelphia, the tri-state region, you know Xfinity has historically been probably one of the worst customer service companies of all time. An absolute monopoly here.
Address, payment info, last four of social, email.
Thanks, Bugle.
That's what Bugle said. My internet kind of sucks here, so pull up the article. It's also tiresome, Marty.
It does. More hack. 36
and a lot months. Of this information is required for them. A lot of this information is required for them to take.
Yeah.
By governments.
Yeah.
By the way, Marty. I remembered who the guy was that was FUDDing while accumulating. It was Scott Minard of Guggenheim, one of the freaks. Multiple freaks let us know after the most recent episode.
I forgot.
You remember Scott?
That. Yeah, I remember.
He was like,
Scott.
We're gonna fall to 8K over and over again, and then afterwards, after we started pumping, he's like, "Oh, we have a massive position."
It's like Ackman. Crying bloody murder at the beginning of the lockdowns, and then making like $1 billion over the next 6 months.
Yeah.
All right, I can tell that my wife just put our youngest down for the nap. So we've got like 2 hours, my wife and I do, to go to my favorite bar on the top of the hill here to grab a sandwich and a beer. And we're coming up on software updates. So we'll wrap this up. We said we're going to go an hour. Yeah, we're already an hour and 20 in. So we'll end it at like an hour and a half, which is good for a Christmas rip on a Friday. Here are the top four boost from RHR 283, Bitcoin all-time high hash rate. At Bitcoin Rocks boosted 210,000 sats. Burger plus beer Odell is my favorite Odell. Such a good rip. If you hate Elizabeth Warren, put a Bitcoin sticker in public to spread the signal. They're free at bitcoin.rocks/stickers. Shout out to you, Bitcoin Rocks.
Appreciate you.
Come Rocket boosted 69,420 sats. Logan. There it is. Salt Lake Bitcoin meetup.
Did he just say it?
Did you just say it?
No, I just played it really quiet.
Come Rocket.
Salt Lake Bitcoin meetup is Wednesday, January 3rd. The 15th anniversary of the Genesis block with the official launch of Bitcoin. 2024 from 6 to 8 p.m. at Bruvies Cinema Pub, 677 South 200 West Salt Lake City, Utah. Digital sovereignty will be our topic of discussion this month. There's been a growing movement to take back control of your digital experience. Things like running a Bitcoin node, password manager, personal data storage can now be run from simple home servers. We also have an HP 3000 desktop that has been converted into a home server running StartOS to be raffled off. Hell yeah. That would be a massive piece of equipment to have in your house. At Oliver Warsats boosted 57,000 sats. Yuletide shout out for the Christmas rip. Welcome to the world, Christian J. Shout out the new homies from Bitcoin Bay in Tampa. Excuse me. Peace and love from Serpent Dove. Shout out to Christian J.
Much love. Appreciate you. Congrats.
Last but not least, our good friend Wayslice, the fearless leader of the beefsteaks, got a palindrome boost, 55,355 sats. Thank you and happy holidays to everybody that helps make beefsteaks happen. Love you guys, and beefsteak would not exist without you. Many of you generously donated to OpenSats this year. Beefsteak matches those donations. I'm sure other Bitcoin companies are doing the same without even talking about it, right? And thank you to Matt and Marty for RHR and for reading the shameless virtue signaling humble brag. Much love and happy holidays, y'all. Happy holidays to you too, Josh. Thank you for the beefsteak, sir.
Appreciate you, Josh.
Beefsteak has been one of the greatest additions to my life over the last, I think the first one I went to was, what was the first beefsteak I went to?
Mine was 2019 San Francisco, Bitcoin 2019 on CK's rooftop.
I think that was my first too.
I think that was the second ever beefsteak. I think the only other one happened in the backyard.
It was like invite only, no tickets. Yeah, I think San Francisco was my first one too. We broke our beefsteak cherries at the same time.
Yeah, I missed the first one, unfortunately, because I was like, I'm not going to go to this random Bitcoiner's house in Brooklyn. I just don't trust it. But I will say, first of all, if you haven't been to Beefsteak, consider going to one. It's an amazing experience. And then second of all, it's an honor and a privilege that Josh and his wonderful family are so close to me and mine. So shout out to them.
Shout out to them. All right, now we're on the software updates. We're going to wrap this puppy up. We'll blow through them. Albi extension version 3.5 has been released with Firefox mobile support, which is pretty massive. Liquid web wallet bounty as well. We're going to get Liquid integrated. Amboss introduces ghost addresses. Mempool added the Mempool goggles. See who and what is vying for block space at any given moment. It's a pretty cool product. Playing around with it. It's very insightful. The whole being able to dive into the data. It's really cool. Mempool does an incredible job of surfacing that data and presenting it in a very beautiful way. Phoenix Wallet, Android version 2.1 has been released. You can request inbound liquidity now. Core Lightning version 23.11.1 has been released. Cashew version 1. Protocol specs have been merged. If you're interested in playing around with Xiaomi and Mint, Cashew is one of those. And then Cashew Nutshell version 0.14.1 has been released with a stateless mint. And then Cold Card Mark 4 firmware version 5.2.1 has been released. And I do recall MVK letting us know this is a good one. Lots of goodies, screen info about transaction level, relative lock times when signing, temp seed import from Cold Card, encrypted backup, export seed as seed QR on screen, better passphrase UX, and more. So go check that out if you're a Mark 4 user. BTC Pay Server version 1.12.0 has been released with improvements, point of sale enhancements, and more. Wasabi Wallet version 2.0.5 has been released with Shop and Bit integration. Liana version 4.0 has been released with automated coin selection, replaced by fee, cancel and deposit address verification. And then this is something we were talking about in a group chat earlier today, but Twitter is outsourcing its KYC to Israeli intelligence link company. What is it called? Like AutoX0 or something like that?
It's AU10TIX. I think it's pronounced Authentix.
That makes sense. Yeah, they're all. What's the. What's the founder? It's called like 8200 or something like that.
Yeah, the founder is part of his former Israeli unit 8200, which is like their. One of their elite intelligence units. And that was also the group that the founder of NSO was part of, which is the creator of the Pegasus malware software.
Yeah.
That completely can own your phone, just take over your phone. Yeah. So be aware, freaks.
Be aware. Not ideal. I mean, not a good idea to KYC with Twitter. Haven't done it. We'll never do it. Shout out to everybody building on Noster. Shout out to Zach. Forget his last name. We got to play around with Flare. We got to get our, I mean, it's already up on Zap.stream, but it would be cool to begin putting these videos on Flare as well. And they make it really easy. You don't have to upload a file. You can just put a YouTube link in, which we have plenty of.
But all of our past streams are on Zap.stream.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
I think let's see how it goes, but yeah,
what do you think of the name?
It's a good name. It's dude, video storage is hard. Like I've talked to Kieran at length about Zapstream. I think it's a nice balance that you have to live stream first before you can store, because if you just open up the I've learned this with Bitcoin TV, like if you open up the floodgates, you just end up with terabytes and terabytes of videos that no one watches, and you have to pay a shit ton of money for all the hosting. So like, at least with Zapstream, there's like a Twitch incentive there where it's, you have to at least do a live stream if you want it on the platform.
Okay. That makes sense. I hate to rush off here, but I do want to go get a Schmitter. It's one of my favorite things to do when I come back.
No, this is great. Your wife is lovely. Your wife is lovely. Tell her Merry Christmas and stay humble, stack sats, freaks.
Peace and love, freaks. Merry Christmas. Enjoy the holidays. Enjoy the time with your family. Thank you guys for joining us. We love you. Peace.